Ananta koti vaishna vrinda ki jai. Namachari shivahari das takura ki jai. Praying Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Gidhi Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mathura Dham ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Pracharane. Nivasesa Sunyavadi Paskatyade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Sacha. Shri Rupam, Sagrajatam, Sahagana, Raghunatham, Vitam, Samsajivam, Sadvaitam, Sadvadutam, Bharijana, Sahita, Krishna, Chaitanya, Devam, Shri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sahagana, Lalita, Shri Vishakam, Vitamscham, Manchakalpatri, Vishakhi, Vasindhya, Vajapati, Tanan, Pavane, Vyom, Vaishnava, Vimolva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text 25, and it's August 3, 2019, in Zagreb. Idanim dharma padase,
Idanim dharma padase,
Satyam nirvartayad yataha,
Satyam nirvartayad yataha,
Tam jigrik satya dharmoyam,
Tam jigrik satya dharmoyam,
Anritan aidhita kali,
Anritan aidhita
kali. Please chant. Idanim. At the present moment, Dharma, O personality of religion, Padaha, leg, Te, of you, Satyam, truthfulness, Nirvartayet, hobbling along somehow or other, Yataha, whereby, Tam, that, Jigrik sati.
Trying to destroy.
Adharmaha. The personality of religion.
I am.
This. Anritena.
By deceit.
Adhitaha.
Flourishing.
Kalihi.
Quarrel personified.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. You are now standing on one leg only, which is your truthfulness, and you are somehow or other hobbling along. But quarrel personified Kali, flourishing by deceit, is also trying to destroy that leg. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The principles of religion do not stand on some dogmas or man-made formulas, but they stand on four primary regulative observances, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The mass of people must be taught to practice these principles from childhood. Austerity means to accept voluntary things, which may not be very comfortable for the body, but are conducive for spiritual realization. For example, fasting. Fasting twice or four times a month is a sort of austerity which may be voluntarily accepted for spiritual realization only, and not for any other purposes, political or otherwise. Fastings which are meant not for self-realization, but for some other purposes, are condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 17.5.6. Similarly, cleanliness is necessary both for the mind and for the body. Simply bodily cleanliness may help to some extent, but cleanliness of the mind is necessary, and it is effected by glorifying the Supreme Lord. No one can cleanse the accumulated mental dust without glorifying the Supreme Lord. A godless civilization cannot cleanse the mind because it has no idea of God. And for this simple reason, people under such a civilization cannot have good qualifications, however they may be materially equipped. We have to see things by their resultant action. Right? This is a very important point, that we judge things by their fruits. Right? What are their results going on? The resultant action of human civilization in the age of Kali is dissatisfaction. So everyone is anxious to get peace of mind. This peace of mind was complete in the Satya age because of the existence of the above-mentioned attributes of the human beings. Gradually, these attributes have diminished in the Treta Yuga to 3/4, in the Dwapara to half, and in this age of Kali to 1/4, which is also gradually diminishing on account of prevailing untruthfulness. By pride, either artificial or real, that's an interesting statement, artificial pride and real pride, the resultant action of austerity is spoiled. By too much affection for female association, cleanliness is spoiled. By too much addiction to intoxication, mercy is spoiled. And by too much lying propaganda, truthfulness is spoiled. The revival of Bhagavad Dharma can save human civilization from falling prey to evils of all descriptions. Idanim dharma padaste satyam nirvartayed yataha tam jigrik shatyadamoyam anriten adita kali. You are now standing on one leg only, which is your truthfulness, and you are somehow or other hobbling along. But quarrel personified Kali, flourishing by deceit, is also trying to destroy that leg. This purport is fascinating on so many levels. If we were to give a definition of religion, we would usually say religion is something that answers transcendent questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? What is the purpose of life? And so forth. And it has therefore some dogma, some set of beliefs. This is what we believe. And you can see in many religious systems there is some dogma, especially in Christianity and Islam. So, I used to go to every year to a Christian education convention in order to take seminars to help me in being a Gurukul teacher. And it was a particular Christian sect. And they would have huge, like, poster, banner in the hall with their dogma. However many points, 5 points, 10 points. And if you wanted to belong to their sect, then you had to agree with their dogma. And, you know, different Christian sects have different dogma. One time my mother-in-law had gotten a plane ticket to visit us without realizing she was coming on Easter. And I said, my dear mother-in-law, would you like us to take you to a church for Easter? She said, that would be very nice. So she was Lutheran, And I looked up in the area, there were many different Lutheran churches. And I said, which branch of Lutheran are you? So in Christianity, you know, there's the Presbyterians, there's the Lutherans, there's the Pentecostals. So many. And then among the Lutherans, there are so many different kinds of Lutherans. And some of these Christians believe that the other groups are not really Christian. Like the Latter-day Saints Church, the Mormons. Many Christians say, oh, they are a cult, right? Or the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Christians will say. They are a cult. Huh? You had the Roman Catholic, the Eastern Orthodox. So what is the difference is their dogma. They have a different dogma. And they have different rituals. Sometimes rituals are the same, but the dogma is different. Sometimes dogma is the same, but the rituals are different. And people kill each other. Literally, they kill each other over this. There are wars over this. The Sunni and the Shiite Muslims, they kill each other because they have a different dogma and a different set of rituals. What to speak of the Sufis, Muslims? They are considered, oh, they are bogus because they have a different dogma. Although they are also Muslim. The Protestants and the Catholics in Ireland, they were killing each other. And they're both Christians. What to speak of, you know, the Muslims and the Jews, the Christians and the Muslims and the Hindus. Somehow the Muslims are always in this business. Yes? And this has been going on. People, they're torturing. Right now we worry about Muslim terrorism, but not that long ago there was Christian terrorism. Yes, we all studied this. The Christians, they went from the Eastern Hemisphere to the Western Hemisphere, and they captured the indigenous people, and they said, you must become a Christian or we will kill you. And they would torture them. Yeah? We were hearing last night, we were driving back, you were telling us how there are these ruins here where the Romans used to torture the Christians.
Yeah, the Christians.
Yeah? The early Christians.
Yeah,
early
Christians, yeah.
Yes. Because the Romans had a different religion. They had a different dogma. And I'm very sorry to say that even in our Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we have not yet tortured anybody. Not yet. Maybe in 10,000 years when everything falls apart, that will be how it finishes. But so far we've not tortured or killed anybody. But still, we do a very similar thing. You have the wrong dogma. You have the wrong rituals. Of course, it is very interesting because we are the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And Madhva's dogma is different from ours. There are certain parts of his dogma that are different. In fact, on the platform of belief, we are much closer to Ramanuja than to Madhva. And the followers of Madhva, who are not Gaudiyas, they generally do not accept us. They say, you're not really in our Sampradaya at all. So this goes on. And we see there are many, many devotees who dedicate themselves, their life, their energy, to saying, your dogma is wrong. Or your ritual is wrong. You know, you've put your sari on the wrong way or something. I am not just being facetious about this. I've read people writing whole things. You have to wear your sari this way. You have to wear your sari that way. Do you put your tilak from down to up or up to down? And this kind of thing goes on. But Srila Prabhupada is saying here the principles of religion are not standing on dogmas or man-made formulas. And many times in these religions, it's a man-made formula. Like if you look in Christianity, to be very honest, all of the rituals of Christianity are man-made, every one of them. Because Christianity was originally Judaism. The rituals were all in Judaism. And when Paul decided to start his own religion, they had to start their own rituals. So they made them up. And then they want to fight over whose rituals are correct. But he says they stand on four primarily regulative observances. And this Prabhupada is saying also that you have to see things by their resultant action. The first time we met Srila Prabhupada in Chicago in 1974, I was with my husband and my father, and many other devotees were there also. And my father asked Srila Prabhupada, "May I come to the temple even though I am Jewish? I have my own religion." And Prabhupada said, "Yes." Prabhupada was in a very friendly, casual mood. And he said, "Yes, just like we are in Chicago." He was sitting like this and he was leaning back. And his dhoti was up. You could see his leg. He was just like this. He said, "Yes, just like we are in Chicago. And many airplanes are coming to Chicago. So there can be many religions." He said, "But religion means to know God and to love Him. And if you are not trying to know God and to love Him, there is no meaning to religion. Just like if the plane does not know it is going to Chicago, what is the meaning of many planes?" So right now, as we are sitting here, many airplanes are coming to Zagreb, many different airlines. There is a Croatian airline definitely coming to Zagreb. I know the Polish airlines are coming. I'm sure British, Air France, these other airlines, Ryanair, Serbian airlines, maybe Turkish. Yeah, Turkish is coming. So many airlines are coming to Zagreb. That doesn't mean that every airplane in the sky is going to Zagreb. Most of the airplanes that are flying above us right now are going someplace else. They are simply flying over Zagreb. So it's not that you can get into any airplane and you will go to Zagreb. That is not true. But there are many airplanes that are going to Zagreb. That is also true. Some will fly nonstop. Some will take many stops. Like whenever I try to get a ticket, you know, it tells you the timing, right? So sometimes there'll be one nonstop 3 hours. And sometimes for a cheaper price, you can get an airplane that has 4 stops and takes 45 hours. This is why I always get my own tickets. Because when someone else gets me tickets, they are thinking, "Oh, let me save €5 and I will get Urmila a ticket that will take 45 hours for a 3-hour trip." So some religions, they will get you to Krishna, but it will take 45 hours and you will have 5 stops. And other religions, they will take you to Krishna, it will take 3 hours, it will have no stops. And some airplanes, they will serve you a meal, they will show you a movie, you can choose your own seat. On other airplanes, you have to fight for the seat, and you have to buy even water. I went on Tiger Air to Australia. It's a 4 or 5 hour trip. When you fly to Australia, they take away the water you purchased in the airport even. And when you go to the gate, there's another security. And I had just purchased a bottle of water like 2 minutes before they took it away. And then on Tiger Air, they made me pay for water. A half pint, like 1/4 of a liter. I think it was like €4 for 1/4 of a liter of water on a 4 to 5 hour international flight. So it's like that also with some religions. In some religions, you are going to have excitement and parties and good food and good, and others, it's just going to be this dry, difficult process. But you judge by the result. Are you going to know God, and are you going to love Him? And are you going to become happy? Prabhupada said, if you're not joyful, you're not making any advancement. So this is the test of religion, to judge things by a resultant action, not by dogma and ritual. That's not the key. Is it a bona fide religion? What is its dogma? What is its ritual? That's like saying, is the airplane going to take you to Zagreb? By what is its route, and are they going to give you water and food? The question is, do you get to Zagreb? That's the question. Not what is the route. Then you can look at, well, all right, now I've got 15 airplanes taking me to Zagreb. What is the best route to take? Then you can look at that. That is the next thing. But it is not that the airplane that is taking 45 hours is not also going. That is, it's just not factual. And there should be principles of religion. And if these principles are not there, then you're not going to know and love God. These are evidences that one is knowing and love of God, knowing and loving God, and they are means to know and love God. And these are austerity, cleanliness. What else? Mercy and truthfulness. If a religious process says, yes, we will bring you to know and love God, but there's no austerity, there's no, what's the next one? Cleanliness, what's the next one? Mercy and truthfulness, it's not going to take you to know and love God. It will take you someplace else. And if someone says, in our religion, we know God and we love God, and there is no, what are they again? Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, they are not knowing and loving God. They are cheating. It's not just what exactly is the dogma. What exactly is the rituals? That's not the way. You see, does the process involve austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness? And does it achieve austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness? And does it achieve joy? Does it achieve peace? Prabhupada's saying here, peace. If one doesn't become joyful, if one doesn't become peaceful, if one doesn't become satisfied, then you're not achieving religion. And that's all. And there's a heavy lecture where Prabhupada, he's even talking about the Bhagavad Gita. He said, if you are reading the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, but you're not coming to know God, then what is the use? If we simply reassure ourselves, we have the right dogma and we have the right ritual, therefore we are good. We have the rights, we believe the right thing, and we're doing the right thing. But are we embracing austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness? And are we achieving that? We should achieve these things naturally, like breathing. And are we achieving peace and joy and authenticity and equilibrium? Like Prabhupada says, you know if you've eaten a meal that you're satisfied. He said, if you say, I am eating a meal and I'm not satisfied, he said, then either you are not really eating, like maybe chewing gum. You know, people chewing gum, they look like they're eating, but there's no actual eating taking place. Or he said, there are some parasites. Sometimes a person is eating, actually eating, but the parasites are taking all the nutrition. You understand? What is parasite? So if we are following the right dogma and we are following the right rituals, but our lives do not exemplify austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, if we are not becoming joyful and satisfied and peaceful, then either we are not in Krishna consciousness at all. We are covering our Krishna consciousness with karma, jnana, or yoga. Or we are committing some offenses that are taking away our nourishment. And both these things can happen. We can distort the process of Krishna consciousness. This is what's nicely explained by Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manashiksha in the sixth verse about taking a bath in donkey urine, where one can think that one is in a cleansing process, but one is becoming actually contaminated. At that point in Manashiksha, one is already following all the rules and regulations of bhakti. And one thinks, I am doing this in bhakti, but it is really something else. And therefore, one's heart and mind are burning in dissatisfaction. So we can do that. We can fool ourselves. I mean, let's look at the world. So many people in the world are convinced that they are in a religious system, correct?
Yes.
I mean, at least in America, the vast majority of the people will say, I believe in God. In fact, America is the most religious democracy in the world, as far as people saying they believe in God, going to worship regularly, and so forth. And they will give some identification, you know, I am a Lutheran, I am a Presbyterian, I am an Eastern Orthodox. So many people will say, I am religious, or I am spiritual, like the program we did last night. I am 100% certain that most of the people there, if not all of them, would say they are spiritual, yes?
Yes.
You ask any of them, are you, oh yes, I am spiritual. I am dedicated to a spiritual, to spirituality. But are they really? If we look at the world, all the people who are saying, are they really religious? Are they really spiritual? How many of them are real? Not so many. Am I correct? Why? They don't do any austerity. Their bodies and minds are dirty. They're not merciful. And they're not truthful. They're filled with anxiety, dissatisfaction, anger, grief, lamentation, illusion. So we should not think just because I am ostensibly, externally, in a bona fide process, that means that I am bona fide. We have to judge by the result. What is the result? Austerity. Am I naturally detached from the material world? Can I see that detachment growing in me? Or am I always struggling with my senses? We should see it growing. We should see that, oh, something that I was attached to 1 year ago, 5 years ago, it is now gone. That I am growing in detachment. That I can happily, what did Prabhupada describe this here? To accept voluntary things which may not be very comfortable for the body but are conducive for spiritual realization. Am I more and more able to do that not as a discipline by force, but am I more and more able to do that joyfully without even thinking about it? Because there is some development of love. When we love somebody, naturally, we do difficult things for them. That is one of the tests of love. How do you know that somebody loves you? One of the ways is they will take some difficulty for you. If someone says, I love you, but I will only do for you what is easy, what kind of love is that? Very small. That is the difference between boyfriend, girlfriend, and marriage. Boyfriend, girlfriend, as soon as there is some difficulty, oh, it was nice knowing you, and goodbye. And the Western marriage vows are in sickness and in health, right? Rich or poor, happiness and distress. I will stay with you. I will take some austerity because I love you. So if we're doing austerity just as a discipline, what happens when we do austerity as a discipline? What is the effect?
Purification.
No. Hard-heartedness. Austerity as a discipline leads to hardness of the heart. And it's interesting here, Prabhupada says, by pride, either artificial or real, the resultant action of austerity is spoiled. By pride, either artificial or real, the resultant action of austerity is spoiled. If we do difficult things for a higher purpose, and everybody does difficult things for a higher purpose, except somebody really, really in tamagun. All the rajagun people are doing difficult things for a higher purpose, every one of them. If someone has even a little rajagun in them, they will do difficult things for a higher purpose. But if one is proud, I have done a difficult thing for a higher purpose. Look at my difficulty. One of my experiences in teaching Manashiksha, especially teaching about the donkey urine verse, was that sometimes devotees, even ISKCON leaders, would become very offended. And they would say to me, but I'm doing so many things for Krishna. Because the donkey urine verse is about internal deceit. And I remember one of these devotees who was letting me stay in her house. She went to stay in the ashram and she gave me her whole house to stay in while I was there. So she came to me after the class and she listed for me all of her austerities that she'd done in whatever 20, 30 years of bhakti. She just sat down with me and she just listed her austerities. I have spent 12 hours a day cooking in the kitchen. I give my house for any visiting preacher as sannyasi and I live in the ashram. What?
I have given it to everyone,
including you, yes. She spoke for maybe 45 minutes. I got an inheritance, I gave 90% to the temple. She's going through this list. Why was she doing that? Because she didn't want to face that maybe everything wasn't being done for Krishna. That is the donkey urine bath. When we are doing things for the wrong reason. And then sometimes we also do the wrong things. So pride in our austerity. I personally have given up some austerities I was doing because I found I was too prideful about them. And Prabhupada's talking here about fasting. That's exactly the austerity I gave up because I was so proud. Oh, I'm fasting. I really enjoyed the austerity. It was so blissful. But I was very, after a while I could understand. But I'm very proud. I was listening to a lecture where Prabhupada was saying how the karmis, they want to enjoy their senses, the gyanis, they want liberation. The yogis, they want to control their mind and senses. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that's what I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying that I am the master of my mind and senses. And I said, this is rubbish. I'm not doing this for Krishna. I'm doing it for pride of being a yogi. This is just garbage. Or artificial pride, where you're not really doing any austerity at all and still you're proud of it. Right? I've sacrificed so much, and you're looking at them and thinking, really? Like what exactly? So there can also be artificial pride where we're proud of something we haven't even done. And then the result of austerity, Prabhupada said, is spoiled. That kind of austerity doesn't lead to love of God. Where do we see this? Bragging about our austerities, or at least to ourselves, bragging about our austerities. I'm so paka. And we should see, are we clean? I mean, this temple is very clean, but I have to say, some temples I go are not very clean. There's one temple I visited where you walk in the front door of the temple. On one side of the front door is a huge industrial garbage bin. You know those big gray things? Hideously ugly. Right by the front door. It's a beautiful building. And then next to the garbage are the donations people give. So there's like piles of saris and things that people are donating to the temple. And the other side of the door are the boots. You know what is the boots? In Britain they call them wellies. Like the shoes that come up to here, they're made of rubber and you wear them in the garden. So there's this muddy boots and a garden hose and garden right next to the front door of the temple. And I've been in another temple where in the prasadam room there's just, again, people's clothes and bags everywhere all the time. And just, you know, the sinks are full of food. And there's leftover prasadam sitting out 5 hours, 6 hours. And you know, very unclean. So some places we go, it's like that. It's just very, very unclean. Even physically unclean. Sometimes the floors are black. Right? Or one temple I visited, somebody had cut his hair in the bathroom and the sink was full of hair. You know, I've had to stay in some places. One place where I went and I arrived at midnight, so it was a little difficult. Everything was covered with black gunk. You touch anything, you become immediately black. And in the bathroom, the shower wasn't draining, so there was like a big swimming pool in the shower. And the only window was, this was on the ground floor, the only window was very low. So if you open the window, anybody could walk by and walk into the room. So they had an air conditioner, so I thought I'll turn that on to get some air. And when I turned that on, bits of black things, the air conditioner just went, and all these little bits of black things spread all over the room. So, you know, there's some places we just have to say, very honestly, they're not clean. And we see some people, how they are taking prasadam. They're not clean in their habits. Sometimes we stay in devotees' homes also where, you know, on their altar there's just a piece of cloth on the altar. Whenever they have a piece of cloth on the altar, like here, you have a cloth, but that's not going to stay. But if they have a cloth all the time, then they don't take it off and wash it. You know, it's just always staying there. You cannot... I was talking to Nisinga Kavacha about this. You know, you cannot clean the altar if you keep it covered with a cloth. Yeah, you understand? When there's a cloth on the altar and it stays there, then you're not cleaning it. Unless the cloth is removed after one day. And so you'll see on this cloth, there's all this ashes from incense and dried up flower petals and sometimes dead insects also. And they'll be all over the altar. And I see this very often. You know, in the deity's paraphernalia, the silver is black. You know, lack of cleanliness. And then Prabhupada says mental cleanliness. So again, you know, we see this. I was speaking yesterday, you know, watching TVs, movies, so many things. One's mind becomes polluted, or hearing criticism, hearing blasphemy, or not spending one's time glorifying the Lord, not spending one's time reading the Shastra, then one's mind is polluted. Right? And here Prabhupada says, especially that cleanliness is ruined by illicit association, illicit sex. That definitely pollutes one's mind. Because illicit sex is very exploitive. It's one of the most exploitive things that someone can do is an illicit sexual relationship. That you are using the other person's body for your own immediate pleasure without actually taking care of them. So sex is meant for a situation where people take care of each other. And they take care of each other through the good times and the bad times and so forth. I was speaking the other day to a devotee who had some business at a courthouse. And she was saying in the courthouse so many people were dealing with divorce, they were dealing with child custody. And she said this was all sex gone wrong. You know, some man, he had some relations with a woman, she'd gotten pregnant, and now he had to pay all this money, and he was simply lamenting. And so one becomes filled with anxiety. It's simply anxiety. What do they say? Divorce is worse than death. The destruction of a life, the destruction of hope. And so it's spoiling the whole society and destroying people's peacefulness. Prabhupada says marriage is to make the mind peaceful for spiritual realization. But when it's not proper, it has the opposite effect and one becomes simply disturbed. It's a huge, huge problem in society and in our ISKCON society. And then mercy. Many times we think religion means to be not merciful. Religion means that I take some hard line and I am just cruel to everyone. I am right and everybody else is wrong. And so we have to say, like you brought up the other day, Prabhupada would say, this is right, this is wrong. But he was also merciful. We can say, we have to say, this is right, this is wrong. But we are also merciful. This morning I was hearing Prabhupada saying how the cobblers, they would get a cow that died naturally and they would, for no cost, they would get the leather and they would eat the meat. And I thought, in Vedic society, they are merciful to the meat eaters also. You want to eat meat? Fine. Our cow has died? Come kick the cow, you can eat it. You can use the leather. No cost, no charge. It was mercy to everyone. We can say, meat eating is disgusting, it's bad for you. But we will even be merciful to them. Here is some facility. It's not, Vedic society doesn't deny mercy to anyone. And we were saying yesterday, what is mercy? To give someone something they don't deserve. To be kind to somebody even though they don't deserve it. And how merciful are we? I was been really thinking, how merciful am I? Am I really kind to people? When someone comes to me with some problem, am I empathetic? Am I merciful? Or do I just hit them on the head with Shastra? Do I just go, wham, bam, you're wrong, you rascal? Why don't you surrender to Krishna? Or am I merciful? Prabhupada was so merciful. He was cutting, he was honest, he was clear, he wasn't compromising, but he was also merciful. He was both. He wasn't just cutting, and he was never self-righteous. That I am better than you. It wasn't his mood. So if someone has a system of religion And they are killing animals, like you were talking about in the car, yeah? Oh, we are so spiritual. We are in touch with the universe. And we eat our beef in our spirituality. Oh, this is rubbish. It's rubbish. One has to be merciful. One has to be merciful to the animals, to the children, to the women, to the old men, to the brahmanas, to everybody, to the plants, to Mother Earth. And Prabhupada says this is ruined by intoxication. Because when someone is intoxicated, all they think about is themselves. Like I know some devotees, they have a son who's a heroin addict, and they say they cannot let him in the house because he will steal. They love him. They will see him, but not in their house. Because as soon as they allow him in the house, he will steal for his heroin addiction. He will not care. This is my mother and father. Of course, nowadays we have not only chemical addiction, we have electronic addiction. The same thing. You enter a fantasy world with the video games and the movies and the television. And people lose their ability to be merciful. There's just no question. I mean, the majority of the violent crimes in the world are done in relation to intoxication. You know that, yes? This is just a statistical fact, that most of the time when people commit crimes, they're under the influence of some sort of intoxicant. Or the intoxicating media, that you lose your intelligence and it incites people to violence. Again, everybody knows this. It incites people to give up mercy. And then truthfulness. I like it here, Prabhupada says, too much lying propaganda. So we're in a situation right now in the United States where the President of the United States is a constant liar. I mean, everybody knows that politicians lie. In fact, they have to lie sometimes, just like the Vaishyas have to lie sometimes. It's just part of the job. But our current president lies constantly. And there are news media that keep track. That's all right. It's a matter of public record. It's a matter of public record. You can go, any news media, they listed his lies. I mean, they do this for all the politicians. As I say, all the politicians lie. It's very interesting. I was reading some comparison of different American presidents, and they counted their lies. So they're all lying. I mean, it's not like the other presidents were truthful. But our current president is quite exceptional in the number of lies that he tells. And what's interesting about this culture of lying propaganda, and it's not just the president, but the internet has also increased the lying propaganda in the world. I mean, it used to be that in a newspaper, a magazine, if it was a high-class journalist, that they would check what they publish. You know, they wouldn't just publish anything. You'd have to go through certain requirements before it would be printed in the newspaper. I mean, sometimes they printed something that was lying, but they would really try, because journalism is a Brahminical occupation. So they would really try to print the truth, at least the higher class publications. And like in the scientific journals, they have what's called peer-reviewed journals. So if you write something for a scientific publication, other scientists are supposed to review it and make sure it is truthful before it is published. Well, first of all, the journalists are not so careful to check anymore. The scientific journals are not so careful. You find this, again, you can do the research and you'll see that the amount of fraud in the scientific journals is increasing. Because many of these scientists are being funded by business. Or by government. So in order to get money from business or government, they are lying. And the journalists, they are funded by business. In order to get their money, they are lying. And in journalism, there used to be a wall between reporting and advertising. And the wall has gotten thinner and thinner and thinner. So you cannot tell what is reporting and what is advertising. And then, with the internet, anybody can say anything at all. So the peer-reviewed scientific journals are lying, the journalists are lying, the politicians are lying. And so the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, they are lying. And then you can't even tell what is journalism and what is just some person. Anybody can start their own blog, whatever, and say anything. And so this lying propaganda is everywhere. We are saturated with it. And the research is that when lying becomes common, that people stop even caring about the truth. Because people know, we all know, the scientists are lying. And not all of them, obviously. But we know that we cannot, that just because it's written in a scientific journal doesn't mean we can trust it. Just because it's written in the newspaper or on the television news doesn't mean we can trust it. Just because our president or prime minister says something, it doesn't mean it is true. Just because I read something from someone, I cannot trust it. And people become exhausted. They just give up. And they say, okay, we don't care about truth anymore. It becomes exhausting. We're having right now in America political debates for who wants to be the next president. And one commentator was saying that in these debates also some of the people will lie. But it's happening very, very fast. And so it's difficult to check all of the facts. And again, people just become exhausted. The journalists are running, you know, let me check this out, let me check this, let me check this. And they'll put it at the bottom of the screen. Actually, this is not true. And after a while, people just say, I don't know what's true and what's not true. And people then respond just emotionally. Well, this sounds like what I want to hear, so I will believe it. Yes? That's what I wanted to hear. Yes, sounds good to me. And so truthfulness in the society becomes destroyed. When lying propaganda gets to such a point that we cannot trust the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas in the society anymore, then there's no more truthfulness. And without truthfulness, how can you make good decisions? First thing to make a good decision is you have to know the facts, isn't it? Correct? Any decision I'm going to make in life, if I don't have information, how can I make a good decision? Would you like to eat this or this? I have to know what it is. You know, sometimes I go to some country and they have their prasadam is such I have no idea what it is. You know, would you like to eat buddha buddha buddha? I'm like, what is this buddha buddha buddha? I don't know what it is. And sometimes even you look at it, you don't know what it is. When I was in China, everything is made of sticky rice. And you think, oh, this is halva. No, it is sticky rice. Oh, that is a samosa. No, it is sticky rice. Oh, that is cake. No, it is sticky rice. And sticky rice has no taste. So you're thinking it tastes like air, like solid air. So if someone says, do you want to eat this or this or this? But what is it? I have to know what it is. So how can we make any good decisions in life when the information we are being given is false? We cannot move forward in life. So this is the great problem in modern society. Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness are not there, even though there are so many religions. So Prabhupada says, the revival of Bhagavad Dharma can save human civilization. So we have to revive this path of real religion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At least we can do this for ourselves. To make sure that I'm not just having some belief and doing some ritual, but I'm doing austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. And I'm advancing in peace, in satisfaction, in equilibrium, and in joy. Okay. Questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
You just said that this line increasing, especially in internet. But Dharma had a last leg, what is not broken. It was truth, no less.
Yes.
But what this means, that Kali Yuga is having some kinds of torpedo to finish, because you know that even 10,000 years you will be more peaceful age, but it looks like this truth is very...
It's a hard thing to say, truthfulness, yeah? Truthfulness. Huh?
Question is okay?
Yes. In fact, I think it's a very thoughtful question. So what I understand your question to be is in Kali Yuga, we're supposed to have at least truthfulness. But here we are 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, and truthfulness is being destroyed, especially in the last, like, 5-10 years.
From internet.
But the politicians have gotten worse. And the scientists and the journalists have gotten worse. It's not just the internet. All these have become much less truthful. So you're saying it looks like it's getting worse. How is Kali Yuga going to go on for another 427,000 years? And what about Mahaprabhu's movement? With 10,000 years, it seems that instead of things getting better, they're getting worse. So I'm sorry, this was a very negative class. You cannot have in every class everything. The worst class I ever went to was when a devotee tried to have everything in one class. So, I'm sorry, this purport was very negative, and this verse was very negative, so my class was very negative. But we can also, if we want to turn and look at the positive, we can look at the positive. Will that be better? Will you feel better if we look at the positive? So what is the positive? The positive is that our propaganda of Bhagavad Dharma is also having an effect in the world. There is a change in the world. Some of it people may attribute directly to Srila Prabhupada. Much of it they probably have no idea that Srila Prabhupada had anything to do with it. We may not always see a direct result between our going on Harinam, distributing books and distributing prasadam, and what's happening in the world. So many people have Srila Prabhupada's books in their homes. So many people have taken prasadam. So many people have heard the holy name. And what is happening? What is happening with austerity? People are starting to take trouble actually to bring genuine sattva-guna or bhakti to the world. This is happening, especially with the young people. There is a movement away. Like when Prabhupada came to America, there was the hippies or the counterculture. They were rejecting Rajagun, but they were embracing Tamagun. I mean, it was me also. So there was a mood that rejecting this Rajagun, but going to Tamagun. And now I see that there's a push towards Sattvagun. There's a genuine push towards Sattvagun. I mean, you know, she's kind of funny, but one of the candidates running for president right now in America is one of these spiritual people. That, you know, we're going to defeat this culture of hate and fear with love, and we're going to love the earth. And this is a serious political candidate. I mean, I'm sure she's not going to get anywhere. But she got enough to get on the debate stage. you know, people like Oprah Winfrey, who are speaking about such things, are extremely popular. So there's a movement towards, let's take some difficulty for the good of the planet, for forgiveness. The mood about forgiveness and equilibrium and it's growing in society. It really is. And if we look at cleanliness, this is where I see we have a big problem. This I don't see growing in society. This I see diminishing, even in our Hare Krishna movement. I don't see that we're moving towards dharma in sex life, in the world or in our society. And this is really troubling to me. I find it very, very disturbing. You know, the world is definitely going in the opposite direction. And the people who are very spiritual tend to be the people who are most supporting illicit relationships. You know, I'm sorry to say this. You know, and we have religious people who are supporting illicit relationships, but they're generally doing it in a cruel, heartless, proud way. Yeah? Yes? This is the difficulty. So this is a real problem, and I don't see that we've made a lot of headway in the world on this topic. You know, there's some moving in the direction of protecting women and children in the world. There is a growing movement like that. So you could say in that regard, it's growing. There is a push towards not seeing women as sex objects. That is definitely happening. That see women as people. Because when Prabhupada's saying here, cleanliness is destroyed by too much affection for female association, he's talking about it in terms of seeing women as sex objects. And that is a fact. That both religious and spiritual people are pushing that women should be protected, that women should be respected, that women should not be abused. So in that way, perhaps. It's not showing up quite in the way of pushing for marriage and children, which is the way we would expect it to manifest. But it is showing in the way that see women as people, not as objects. That is happening. So that's a positive thing. Then as far as mercy, how many people are now vegan and vegetarian? It's growing like anything. Like anything. I just read in the news that this Impossible Burger, now it's going to be in all of the stores, not only in the restaurants. And pretty much all of the big, big meat restaurants, McDonald's, Burger King, they're all now selling vegetarian burgers. People are writing big articles in the top magazines, newspapers. The beef industry is going to be finished very soon. So this is astonishing. And more people coming out against abortion. I've also read a number of articles in major newspapers that it won't be long before people will just be amazed that we ever allowed abortion. They will think of it like the Nazi Holocaust. So there is a movement going in that direction towards mercy. And I think mercy in general. There is a mood in society that we should be kind to people. That even if someone has fallen, even if they are having some difficulty, even if they are not, you know, the average person, we should be kind to them. Yes? Is this also growing? People who are different from you. People who are from other countries, other cultures, whatever. People who are disabled. That they should be treated with mercy. So this is also growing in society. And there is a big pushback against this lying propaganda. There are also millions and millions of people who are fighting for truthfulness. Who are trying to counter the lying propaganda. It's not all going in one direction. And people are interested in yoga. They're interested in God. They're just tired of all the dogmas and rituals that pass for religion. And do we blame them? I was tired of the dogmas and rituals that pass for religion, and that's why I joined the Hare Krishna movement. I was brought up religious, very religious actually. But it was all just dogma and ritual. It was all empty. If we preach dogma and ritual, we're not going to help anybody. But it's a growing trend in the world. We want the real thing. We don't want some shell of religion. More and more people are doing kirtan. Yes? It's growing. You know what is really growing in the world is meditation. More than hatha yoga, more than kirtan, what is growing is meditation. It's become completely mainstream. One of the people who pushed meditation, he's a Buddhist, he said, I want to make it so that everyone knows that meditation is good, even if they don't do it. He said, just like exercise, everyone knows getting exercise is good. Maybe they don't do it. But if you say, do you exercise? They will either say yes or I should. He said, so I want everyone in the world, if you ask them, do you meditate? They will say either yes or I should. I know one young man who was brought up in Krishna consciousness and he's renounced Krishna consciousness. He's still a vegetarian, but he says, I'm an agnostic. And I said to him, do you meditate? He said, I should. Now, unfortunately, the trend towards meditation has been co-opted by the Buddhists, by the impersonalists and the voidists. But the inclination for meditation is there. I'm sure we have something to do with that. So what our business is to take these trends in society, and if they're going to be successful, they have to be founded on Bhagavad Dharma. There are trends towards austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness that are going on in society to counter this wave of Kali. But if they're not based on Bhagavad Dharma, very clear, they're not going to have the proper effect. So that is our business. We need to do that ourselves, and then we need to bring that to society. Many people are hungry for it. And you can say, well, you know, it's already predicted, so we don't need to worry about it. But Prabhupada was very clear, it's predicted, but whether we get the credit or not is up to us. There's no prediction that ISKCON is going to be there for 10,000 years. The prediction is Mahaprabhu's movement. And Prabhupada was very clear, do you want to get the credit or not? If we don't get the credit, Mahaprabhu will energize somebody else to get the credit. That is... Prabhupada was very, very clear about that. So that is up to us. And there are devotees, I know of many devotees, who are teaching personalistic meditation. And like we have so many devotees plugging into the yoga trend and teaching bhakti through yoga. Teaching bhakti through... We have one devotee who's preaching, I don't want this to be recorded, but he's preaching in a country where you're not allowed to preach. Through vegetarian cooking classes. So, no, I'm not teaching Krishna consciousness. I'm teaching vegetarian cooking classes. I'm teaching yoga. We have a vegetarian restaurant. And the people are interested. Teaching how you can purify your mind, how you can become clean. I know devotees who are preaching through protection of women. I know some devotees in India especially who run programs for protection of women. And they are preaching Krishna consciousness through that. So, you know, we see that also. But my apologies. This purport was very negative, and the verse was very negative. So I went for a negative class. I'm sorry, this is... Tomorrow's verses... Oh, but I won't be here tomorrow. I will just be here Monday. Yeah, but that's going to be... That's also negative. We've got a positive... 26 is pretty positive, but then there's no purport. And 27 is, again, really negative. Sorry about that. So that's... I have like a personal... It's not like a vow, but I have a personal commitment that whenever I give class on a verse, that I will speak about that verse and purport. That I will, not say, well, there's something I want to talk about, and I really, it's something that's very important to me. But that means some classes are very positive and some classes are very negative, because different verses have different moods. And, you know, some classes you're just focused on Krishna Lila, and other classes you're focused on social issues. It's just what it is. So that's... Sorry. Was there anything else? Every day I think I'm going to end early and it doesn't happen. Is there anything else? I hope I didn't offend anybody. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.